I was in Launceston that day, Richard, and I can assure you the hotel that I was staying in hadn't expected things to be quite that hot either, or they might have installed some air conditioning. I've only got 5 minutes allotted, and we've got time for questions, or some time for questions afterwards, so I'll try not to be too long in just making one or two comments, ideally provocative comments, to get some discussion going. I too must confess to a youthful enthusiasm for understanding electricity systems, and did quite a bit of work looking at the operation of electricity systems, particularly as social institutions dominated by engineers. And it's fair to say, in those bad old days of the State Electricity Commission of Victoria and the HEC and BC Hydro and Ontario Hydro and the others that I studied, that there was a kind of an expectation that the future would resemble the past very much. And the dominant philosophy is perhaps best characterized as a kind of field of dreams approach. Women don't understand that movie. Men pretend to understand it, but we probably don't understand it either. But that's the build it and they will come. And it's fair to say that the prevailing approach to meeting the energy needs of citizens from electricity utilities used to be that there would always be demand for things in the future. But we've changed substantially, I think, in the past 20 or so years in terms of our expectations of the future. And I think we're now in a situation where the predominant concern is probably uncertainty, our inability to know everything we need to know in order to make sensible long-term investment decisions. And that really strikes me as being the problem. A lot of this has to do with geography and geopolitics. The fact that there are very useful sources of energy like hot rocks in the Cooper Basin that, you know, people say, well, the technology is competitive if you ignore the transmission cost. Well, you can't ignore the transmission cost. They're in the wrong place. I don't think the Earth's about to run into enormous oil supply problems, despite the enthusiasm of some of the peak oil activists, most of whom I note tend to lack the sort of qualifications that one would expect to base reliable predictions about the future on. I mean, the classic, I think, was last year when there was a spike in the world price because of tension in the Straits of Hormuz, and Sky News consulted Dr. Michael Lardelli of the University of Adelaide, who turned out, Google's a wonderful thing, you know, you Google him and you find out that while he's a peak oil activist, he's a senior lecturer in genetics and specialises in the genetics of zebrafish. Now, you know, so there's a need to be very careful about these sorts of things. I think we're not quite at the peak oil stage yet. I'm quite happy to consider that in the longer term that's a constraint. But I note Sheikh Yamani, the Saudi oil minister's aphorism, of course, that the Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. There are likely to be other constraints along the way. But of course, the location of energy, particularly oil, because we've got a tremendous vulnerability, and the location of those demanding it gives rise to some very serious concerns, particularly because I think, as John pointed out, some of it's in politically unstable regions. And even they are not the regions that we thought were the ones of concern in the past. And there's a lot of misunderstanding of this issue, not just here but in the United States. I printed off a recent poll in the United States where most Americans have no idea where most of their oil imports come from. 49% of them think that the majority of the largest source of imports into the U.S. is Saudi Arabia. It's not. Only 13% of the population identified correctly that the largest source of imports of oil into the United States is from Canada. So, you know, we need to understand that many of the punters out there to whom the public service through their ministers are accountable have got all sorts of strange ideas. The Middle East is certainly important, but just as important are sources of supply like West Africa, Venezuela, and particularly Russia. While the United States is understandably concerned and vulnerable as the kind of guzzling nation that it is, East Asia is also extremely concerned about the reliability of supplies and the potential for disruption, particularly when so much of it passes through particular choke points and seaways, and it's looking to diversify. So I think the key point, I think, to stress at this stage is the extent to which the future is uncertain, and the risks are considerable, perhaps not in the apocalyptic to an apocalyptic extent, but worth worrying about, but worth keeping an open mind and keeping a weather eye on sources of energy insecurity. I'll leave it at that for now, and we'll have some questions and discussion.